Welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 655. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Evergroy, and of course, joining me as ever is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going?
It's good. I think things are starting to become closer to normal. Things are like a little more freer in the state of Ohio where I actually live. We're able to do a few more things. I'm on the road for work, traveling, so we're sitting on a hotel room with dodgy Wi-Fi trying to do a show, which is always fun. And the most important thing about the fact that things are almost normal is the fact that we're going to have racing this weekend for MotoGP.
That's right. So, it's
racing. It's awesome. Gotta
race,
love it.
Race week is here. You know, after the delay of last year, certainly felt like it got here very quickly. Which is a good thing. I think most years, even though we know it starts later in the spring, we're like, oh man, it's never going to get here. Now it's like, whoa, it's here? Okay, wow, this year's flying by.
Yep, it is. And time is still a flat circle. I mean, we had a couple of days, a couple of weeks, like a week of like really nice 65, maybe 70 degree weather. So I got my car out, I drove my car. I was really happy about that. So things are looking up, man. But how's the little one? Tell me, how's he doing?
He's doing good. He's getting big. You know, so I should post a picture up here on our Facebook page. Jim sent me a cool little gift for when he was born. It's a Marquez onesie.
Yeah, because friends don't let their friend's kid grow up to be a Rossi fan, okay? That's just how...
and I think at the time he had bought it, it was like for 3 to 6 months. And so this guy is not even 3 months yet, and he's outgrown all the 3 month stuff, and he's now in 6 month old clothes. And he's still got like another week to go before he even hits 3 months. So this dude is growing like crazy. But he's really entertaining. He's got a lot more personality now. He's smiling, he's laughing, and all this stuff. But you know, the most important thing here, it's really, really cool, Jim, is that he loves racing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got another race fan. That's even better.
That's right. And because I sit him, like, most times if he sits on my lap and watches TV, whatever's on the TV, he'll kind of be interested in. Some sports he likes because there's a lot of bright colors and they move around quickly. But nothing is as attractive and bright as racing. So he'll sit on my lap for like an hour to an hour and a half, and he'll actually watch all the racing with me. He's been watching like Supercross every week, and now we're getting triple headers, so I'm gonna get a couple of days with him doing that. And the 24 hours of Daytona, we got to sit there and watch a lot of that. 12 hours of Sebring, he just sits there and he chills out. And then if he gets tired, then I just give him a little bit of food, and sometimes he'll knock out. So I'm actually thinking maybe when racing comes around this year, even I have to get up early anyway. If it's just me and little dude watching TV at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm more than happy to do that and watch some racing. So the note taking might take a little bit of a hit. But at least I'll be able to watch the racing in general.
It's all that matters, man. You got somebody to watch with you, which is the best part.
That's right. So hopefully he continues the trend and doesn't get too bored with it. I know sometimes it's harder for younger kids to really sit down and like, all right, this is going to be 3 hours of racing. Like, I'm going to go outside and play. All right, I'll see you when you're like 13 and that kind of stuff kicks your interest again. We'll see.
That's what happened with my boy. He's more interested now in Supercross and in racing in general. And he's almost 14 now, so it comes around in circles.
Yeah, I think when I was little, I remember my dad was he watched a lot of racing, and I probably sat around. I could probably watch about the first 20 minutes of a NASCAR race when he was watching a lot of those back in the Dale Earnhardt days, and I would, you know, like, okay, 20 minutes, cool. I've seen this. Let me know if anything happens and go outside. And I wanted to go ride bikes with my friends and make my own races out there and do that kind of stuff. And then I think, like I said, probably around about 13. What really did is my dad got a Camaro, a 69 Camaro, and we started working on that together when I was about 12. And that kind of piqued my interest again in cars. And it just, you know, the trickle effect where you're watching cars and then you're racing and watching racing and then you're going to races. And all this just started hitting in the gears, no pun intended, started turning in my head about, you know, wanting to work on cars. And then that blossomed into me turning that into a career, then working on motorcycles and being on motorcycle teams and car race teams. And then somehow now I'd work with computers all day long. But, you know, such is life.
such is life.
But yeah, so everything here is good. Speaking of normalcy, there's a lot of that happening now here. I mean, a couple of buddies are looking to book the F1 trip, and we're noticing that because of all the COVID vaccinations, that is dropping down everywhere, which is nice. I have a lot of friends here that are starting to get their first rounds of the vaccine because they're in that first wave of first responders, childcare, anyone that's like a more at-risk profession, they're getting shots. But to be honest, I think a lot of people are just going down there and saying that they do something because there's no background checks on it. So, regardless, the cases are coming down, and I think things probably in about 2 months, they're really going to start to open up a lot of stuff, which is really good for around here because I know the small shops got hit hard, especially in my city, because they were barely making it when everything was up and running, and then yeah, this took out quite a bit.
Yeah, Texas is opening back up, probably one of the more open states in the US here. But what I was thinking is, I'm wondering if we're really going to have a MotoGP race there. Because if you look at the schedule for MotoGP, they're saying, hey, it's to be determined. And they're talking about doing it in around Thanksgiving, US Thanksgiving in November. But that's after they've already gone back to Europe from Asia swing, ran Valencia. I can't see them getting on a plane and coming over here for COTA and Argentina. Can you?
It all depends on how the season goes. I mean, as Lewis Hamilton once famously said last year, cash is king. So if they did not make a lot of money last year, as we know because of what happened, if they can make everything work this year and the vaccines by then, it should be really available to everyone. And I think you'll see a big squash on this whole thing. Unless we have like another wave come up and riders and teams are getting sick. I mean, they vaccinated the whole freaking paddock at this point, right? I think the circus is coming to town. Just because
I hope you're right.
they've
I
taken
don't want to
care of
miss it.
their, yeah, they're taking care of theirs. Now, how things will be regulated at the track will be full capacity. That part I don't think is going to happen. I think you will still have a very distant, like experience at a lot of tracks. I don't think we're going to be, slamming down, 400,000 people inside of a stadium anytime soon.
No. I just would be impressed if it actually the race actually happens in Texas.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're going to want to come. I think the season's long enough with enough races that I don't think they're going to want to get back on the planes and fly back to America.
I don't
Now,
know.
if they were coming from Asia and went right to the US and Argentina and then went to Valencia and ended that, and then they could still do that. But as it is right now, I'm only 75% confident that we'll see a race in the United States.
Yeah, I'm more doubtful of Japan and the Asia swing. I mean, Japan's not even, they haven't even certified a vaccination yet, and they're not even letting people travel. I mean, I was looking at taking a look at doing the F1 race in October, and that was like a big red flag. Like, nope, can't travel. Like, oh, all right. So, but this is, in the grand scheme of things, it's not far away, but it is still kind of, right? I mean,
Right. Everything's still in play.
yeah.
It's a matter of what happens between now and some reasonable amount of time that they would need to know when to put it on the schedule. I mean, I can't see COTA saying on October 15th, hey, yeah, look, we're having a race. Like, that's going to be hard for me to rebook my airline tickets and hard for me to get
So
my
what
hotel
is the what do
rebooked
you
and
think that the acceptable time frame is? 9 weeks?
I was figuring that they've got to have an answer somewhere around the end of July, the first part of August. That's when I think they've got to make a decision about what they're doing with the races in the Americas. And I say that because that gives them time to say, hey, look, here's the date. It's November this. So if it's out by August 1st, you've got August, September, October. So you've got essentially 3 months to plan tickets, airfare, whatever it is that you need to do, if you're driving, whatever, to get to the track. And that gives the track time to organize what they're going to do. I'm sure they're going to follow probably some same similar protocol that like Formula One will have adopted. I don't know that, but I mean, it's a big open area. I do think people are going to kind of be in their little pods and they'll be on the hills or wherever in their little pods, and they're going to be somewhat away from everybody. I think that's just kind of how everybody's geared. But there's a lot more that goes into that, and I'm not so sure what they're going to do. But I say they got to have something by at least August 1st.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, right? And I think that the first month will really give us a view as to how things are going, and then it'll really have us, or really have us on a place where we can make a better idea of what's going to be happening. But back to kind of talking racing and that it's happening this weekend, and we did mention F1. What I'm trying to understand and wrap my head around here, Jim, is why MotoGP is going to go up against the juggernaut that is F1. And sometimes that does happen during shared weekends, but that's because there's a night race versus a day race. This is the same time zone. One's in Qatar and one's in Bahrain, and they're both night races. And I'm thinking, oh, that's not great for their ratings.
Yeah, I don't. What I was trying to think about, and I can't. I don't know because I don't follow the F1 scene as tightly as I follow MotoGP. But I know that they had testing scheduled for F1 cars, and then they were going to be in Australia, like a week later. Well, that wasn't acceptable to the Australian government because they wanted a quarantine,
Oh, that's right. Something
which
like 14
that's
days or
fine.
something like that.
So they said, fine, we're not going to Australia. We'll start by doing testing in Bahrain and then we'll just race in Bahrain. So I don't know if the Bahrain race got moved up or pushed back to put it on the same day weekend as MotoGP. I'd have to look back, but I don't remember off the top of my head. So I think something got moved there that is causing this conflict. It's going to be that one time because Formula One's going to be done at Bahrain, and then the next weekend MotoGP races again at Qatar, so it's not going to be a problem. It's one time off. It's a one time off deal. Yeah, it's not going to be that big of a deal. Set your DVRs, people.
There you go, right? I mean,
Man.
I've got a subscription to everything these days, so
Yeah.
and to be honest, I watch very few of them live. So it doesn't, except for the night races, that's what's lovely, is that I can actually get up early enough to catch them live, and it's like, oh, so I have to pick and choose, and well, yeah, I think F1 might win that one just because of the crazy storylines. But we're gonna get to some MotoGP news and whatnot. We don't have any listener feedback because it is the beginning of the season, and we did have some interesting ideas. I did come across, I saw a listener did write in, I could probably get it in my email here, but they were talking about doing another fantasy league for MotoGP. Honestly, it's fun. I mean, you guys may want to set it up maybe like on the Facebook page. You get the fan, you know, listeners can kind of get that going on your own. I don't have any time for that. Unfortunately, I barely have time to do this show, so I wouldn't even be able to manage or see what's going on with that stuff. I don't know about
Well,
you, Jim.
I'm busy with work and travel because in the business that I'm in, this pandemic makes it everything more important for what we do. But if you really are into the fantasy league, don't worry, my friends. You have the good old man himself, Mr. Martin Darlington, has a fantasy league that you can join. So if you want to, there are links on his Facebook page and his Twitter. Just go to at Motopod Martin and you will see those links, and then you can get in on the Motopod Mayhem there. So if you're into the fantasy league, go to Martin's
There you
at
go.
Motopod Martin.
And it was Gregory Scraps who's actually sent that in. He was asking about that because he brought back the days when we used to do the MCN Fantasy League. And I remember doing that as well. That was a fun time. But yeah, it's just, yeah, go hit up with Martin. And then also make sure you give his podcast a listen to. Free plug for Martin, History by Hollywood. There you go.
It's
Great
good.
podcast. It is
It's really
good.
good.
Okay, so this is going to be kind
News.
of a typically unorthodox a show because we're just, you know, cramming stuff in here before the season starts and just checking back in with everyone before we have to get to the normal format. But we do have some news, and I probably have some trash talking to do as well as my usual opinions. But I wasn't the only one out there doing it. We'll get to that in just a second. But for instance, Mark Marquez. Now, this is a funny one because this connects several ideas for me. He was able to finally get out and test his arm on a real motorcycle. He jumped on what's known as the RC213V-S, which I don't know what the main difference is between that is and the actual MotoGP bike. Now, you can't use the GP bike because there's no extra testing allowed outside of the official tests for that factory. But so he needed to hop on something that was similar. I'm guessing it's probably like a different engine because everything else certainly from the outside looks very similar.
It's basically, it is the street version that Honda built all of it, kind of like the Desmo DC that you could get from Ducati, right? So
Gotcha.
I think they built them, they only built them for like a year, I think. And it might have been like around 20, I want to say it's around 2014, 2015, they built the bike. So it's got the same frame geometry. The motor comes basically, the stock version of it's got like 100 horsepower. And the European bike's got like about 150 horsepower. And you can buy this kit from Honda that takes it up to like somewhere around almost 200, right? But the catch is that that motorcycle doesn't have like the Magneti Marelli electronics on it. It does not have the Öhlin suspension. It's got the or carbon brakes, right? It's got regular steel Brembos on it. It or Nissan maybe from Honda. I'm not sure which way it is. But the kicker is that bike's $184,000 if you
Can
want one.
you repeat that one more time? I'm pretty
One
sure I did not hear that
100.
correctly.
$184,000 to buy that
Okay.
motorcycle. So I get a
Well.
friend at work who I've turned into a race, who was a race fan, but I turned him into a MotoGP fan and fan of the show. Shout out to Dave. And we were talking, he was like, what kind of bike is that he's on? And I was like, well, I was trying to think of a way to explain what's different about that bike. And I tried several different ways and it didn't work. And I finally realized it's like, think of it this way, folks. If you've ever watched the Daytona 24 or the Sebring 12 Hours, you see Corvettes running around on the racetrack. It is a ZR1 Corvette. Well, I can go to the Chevrolet dealer and I can buy a ZR1 Corvette. But that ZR1 Corvette does not have the same motor in it that the race car has. I mean, that's a normally aspirated 750 to 800 horsepower motor. The vets that are supercharged make that. So you don't get that motor. You don't get the suspension. You don't get the really trick suspension that they have underneath the car. You're not getting some crazy carbon fiber brakes that are on the car. So it's like buying a Corvette and right and you know, oh, I want the race version of the Corvette, and I go buy one. But it's not really the one that Pratt and Miller make. So
No,
that's the
no.
best way I can describe what's different between the two.
Yeah, the only similarity is probably the Chevy badge on it, and that's about it. Now, sticking with Marquez, because he was able to hop on the bike, everyone's eyes went to pop out of their heads like, he's back. Is he going to race? He had to assess himself, right? And this was the whole point. So he got to hop on that bike there at Barcelona for a few days, and then he got to hop on it at Portimão, which is a great track to test your strength because that is probably going to be one of the most brutal tracks you will have to visit this year as far as all the braking and the amount of turns, yada, yada. Now, the doctors and Mark agreed that there's still a lot of healing to do, and he's just not quite ready to get back on a bike, and he's going to miss the first two races of the season. So at this point, I just figure he's probably listening to Motopod and he's learned his lesson. He's going to take our suggestions, just chill for a little bit, and then come back and win the season when he's already down 50 points and be amazing.
If you listen to the show about Save the Riders, you know from a doctor's perspective how severe that injury is and how damaging it was and what almost amounted to a career-ending injury. Just the fact that he can get back onto a motorcycle and ride, and in some of the photos I saw from the test, he did have the elbow down. I mean, the kid's going to come back. He's going to be fast. Is he going to be Marc Marquez of old? Maybe, because he's been off of a motorcycle for 8 months. I don't care what you do as a profession. If you stop doing it for 8 months and then decide I'm going to go back and start doing it again, you have to relearn a lot of stuff that was muscle memory. Way to go, Jim, muscle memory. Because he's got all the muscle he's got to build back up in his right arm. There's all that stuff that you just, that edge that you miss, because he hasn't been on a motorcycle at all. And it isn't like he's been riding around on his dirt bike or riding around on his mini moto, which he was doing. But it's going to take him some time, and that was a serious injury that he sustained. And again, if he only misses two rounds and he comes back and he races the third round of Portimão, heck, if he even starts at the fourth round of the season, there's enough races that him giving up somewhere between 50 and 75 points, I still think he could win the championship.
Oh, yeah.
I would not put it past him. I mean, I think he's got enough speed, enough talent to be able to come back, be near podium or on podium per se, and then eventually just move himself right back up to where he's just winning races left, right, and center again. And you wouldn't put it past him to rip off towards the end of the year like a 5 or 6 race win streak and win a title. It just you have begun to believe that the impossible is possible with him, and it very much could be.
Yeah, and not to mention that he probably does get in the other rider's head a bit these days, right?
Oh,
when he comes back, they're going to be like, oh, I got to push because Marquez is back because he's got that extra 0.3. I got to push it. And that, of course, will lead to people overriding and putting themselves in situations. And we're really going to see, you know, test the mental fortitude of a lot of these guys when he does, you know, when he's sitting across there on the grid and looks over to the left and looks over to the right and they're looking back at him like, I thought we got this guy out of here for a while. But we will have to see. Definitely something that we're looking forward to this season. And again, Mark, if after 2 races you're still not feeling great, just continue. Don't rush yourself back, buddy. Just get healed up and then come back and start kicking some ass again like we know you can. All right. Do you want to take the next one?
We can. Well, shock of all shocks, Dovizioso will test the Aprilia RSGP. And he has said, I'm going to test it, but I'm not going to do really anything else. Well, guess what? Mr. Salvadori, if you are not going as fast on that bike as you should be, I think one Mr. Dovizioso will soon be taking that ride. Now, it's
that guy is sweating. He saw the news crowd. He's like, shit, man, I just got this bike, and Dovi's going to play. Like, come on, man.
It's a last-minute deal. Let's be real. But, I mean, come on. I think everybody knew that when Dovi said, I'm not riding, I'm taking a sabbatical, if he was going to go back, the only seat he could have potentially gotten was an Aprilia seat, right?
True.
Now, given the fact that, you know, he's been sitting around and he's been waiting to hear how Marc Marquez is doing and whatnot, and he's like, whoa, that boy's back on track. Well, maybe I should, you know, maybe I got to go hit up Aprilia because I want to be back on the track too. Mm-hmm. I think it has more to do with what Dovizioso saw. I'm pretty sure he went to the factory at Aprilia in Noel. I think he saw what they were doing. I think he liked what they were doing. And I'm beginning to think as well that he thought that, hey, there might be something here. And he's like, well, I'll test it. And there's no harm in testing it. I mean, let's face it. He is one of the best thinkers of a motorcycle that's riding right now. He's sort of that professor type guy. And he's going to get as maximum that he can out of the motorcycle. So good person to put on there just to see where he is and where it all is in relative sense. But I got to believe that given some of the testing results that we'll get into, that Dovi is angling to wedge in there and kick Salvadori out the door. I just think that's where where this one's heading.
Very much so. I mean, I figured at the very least he was looking out and saying, okay, you know, I'm going to be on sabbatical, but I know Marquez may not be back. So case Honda, you know, your boy's over here waiting. And then he saw Marquez back on track and said, all right, let me give Aprilia a call after all and see about that bike if they still want to bring me down. And yeah, one test ride, go out, set a lap time within, you know, X percentage of what you used to do. He'll go, oh, still got it. Aprilia bike, cool. Salvadori, man, you mess up just this much, dude. Like, 2 bad results, and they're going to be like, hey, why don't you go back to testing, okay? Work on your craft. Dovizioso, why don't you come up here and bring your sponsorship, your fame, and your results onto this bike and work with Aleix. And Aleix is sitting there like, please don't. I don't need this smoke right now. I'm trying to build this program up and let everybody believe that, you know, if it isn't mean, if this guy starts outperforming me, then I'm going to be out of a job too. So let's leave him in the testing role. Because I think Aleix wasn't happy about somebody else. They were talking about coming to being a tester, and he was like, nah, I'm good. So,
yep.
I mean, these guys got to be selfish. It's the top.
Yeah.
It's the top. Mm-hmm. You got to make it all advantage you. You don't, then you're out the back real quick.
Agreed.
So, well, that's pretty much the only on-track news. Now, there is some off-track news, which is just, you know, first off, you know, Maverick Vinales, him and his partner are expecting a little girl, and it's on the way. So congratulations to Maverick, and I don't know what his girlfriend's name is, but congratulations to them coming. Now, this part, I was texting Jim about this because I think Oh, the show's old friend, Jorge Lorenzo. I think he got into some wine. Ugh. Or maybe a few weeks
The really good
ago.
ham.
Yeah. He got loose on Twitter, and boy, did he have some things to say. So this starts, actually goes kind of reading today. I think Cal had mentioned something when he took the testing role over from Jorge, and we never got to see him ride that Yamaha, really. And Cal is always known for saying, what he thinks and what, not shy about it. But when Cal, who at one time was known for being a little bit of crash low, he low-sided in the Qatar test. Jorge Lorenzo was right there to jump loose on the pitcher in the comment section and go, "See, I told you so," which of course was met with quite a few angry thumbs firing back on the messages, with Jack Miller stepping in and telling him to stop acting like a child and grow up. And then Aleix Espargaró jumped in and he was like, "This is ridiculous." And then, well, Lorenzo wasn't quite done. This one was brutal. It was along the lines of he said that to Aleix Espargaró, "I know your manager was a beast, but after all the lack of results you've had, you're still lucky to have a seat." And I was just like, well, Jorge, I mean, you're great. We know you beat Marquez at his top. You've beaten Rossi at his top. You've beaten Stoner at his top. I mean, you're great, dude. You're one of the top. What you all said, I can't really say isn't true. But damn, dude, really? Like, that's how you're gonna be working outside the. I mean, you weren't really the biggest personality, and people didn't like you so much then. And yeah, I think maybe he's grabbing hold of that heel role and just letting it ride.
Yeah, he even had something else that he threw out there because he never did give up on it. I was trying to find it in here because he said it, and it was, oh, it's something along, I can't remember. It was something along the lines of oh yeah, so here it was. It was Sport Bike Magazine, and they were saying to Lorenzo, "We all know you used to be an incredible rider, even people who don't like you know it. The fact that you need to say it very often is not right on Twitter." And he says back to it, he says, "It's strange when you speak about facts, and it's never arrogance if you can back it up." I'm like, whoa, hello. Oh man, that boy, he's either like eating some of that really expensive ham and drinking some wine, and just like he needs to have a Twitter break, and he needs to be putting Twitter time out. Like you do not need to be doing tweets here. But oof, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Lorenzo was a champion. You cannot take any of those titles, three titles that he won, away from him at all. But come on, bud. I mean, Troy Bayliss isn't out there like harping on everybody, in World Superbike after all those titles. And I
He
don't
let
know. It's
Foggy do
just
that.
weird.
Even Foggy came good now. So him and
I
Frankie Keely
know.
get along just well.
Exactly. I mean, you gotta let bygones be bygones. I mean, it smacks of a person who feels like they got tossed out the door, and I'm sitting there thinking, you caused your own problem. I mean, okay, maybe he did get done over dirty by Ducati when they tossed him, right? But he found his way back onto a Honda, and either wasn't prepared to ride the Honda that way or couldn't ride that Honda that way. You make your own decision about that one. And then he was going to be back on a Yamaha, and he never got to do anything because of the COVID season. That's fine. But a lot of people didn't get to do a lot of things because of the pandemic. So now he's just going to sit there and start bashing everybody on Twitter. It's like, oh boy, wow.
Yeah, but at least it was entertaining for off season, and
Oh, it was.
he kind of
It
capped
was
off
fun
the
to
off
read.
season before we headed to the track. So I was like, okay, sure. I mean, he can't really be the trash talking and back it up on the track now. So I mean, I guess he's just the internet writer now. So whatever. All right, so that's enough of the silly news and everything else. We actually do have some MotoGP testing to talk about, which is great. But I mean, obviously, before we get started. Just, everybody knows what this is. This is Skyler and Jim overreacting to testing. We don't know what they were doing on the bikes, who set lap times at when, what fuel lows, what mappings they're running. We're still going to sit here and probably predict, I think this person will win, and we could be completely wrong because we're armchair quarterbacks or racers or whatever you want to throw in there for a metaphor. But still, we're here to talk about it, so let's get into it. And leading after your combined test results here, at Qatar is Jack Miller on the Ducati. And he ran a 153, 183 for the fastest time during the test, which is a solid time out there on the Ducati. But more importantly, is that he scared the bejesus out of everyone because they're like, wow, he's very consistent and looks very good. And the likes of Vinales and both Marc Marquez say he's probably the odds-on favorite to harass anybody for the championship this year.
Agreed. From what I've seen of Miller, Miller has adapted to the factory team without a problem. He is going to lead that team. I think he's been there long, been around long enough to have earned that title as the leader of the team. He's showing what he can do, which is what he needed to do to be in that leader position. And no one can argue with those lap times, and no one can argue with the consistency at which he put down laps. So the Ducati looks good in his hands. But he's even admitted that you got to ride the Ducati far differently than what he even imagined, especially with the new tires. So he's apparently figured out how to adapt his style to the tire, to the motorcycle, and he is getting the best out of that combination so far.
No, I agree. And again, this is a, I mean, let's face it, Qatar is a bit of a Ducati track, right? And it's got a
Big long
huge.
straightaway with a lot of horsepower. Yeah,
That's
definitely.
right. That's right. And slingshot corner that gets it wound up onto it. So, again, one test, one track. Yeah, we'll see. But I mean, this we know Jack Miller, and we know how good he is. And I think he's starting to like he's reaching his peak right now. And
Yeah,
whether or not that
yeah.
results in a championship, I'm not sure. But this was like this is the perfect time for him. This is his, what's this, his
Boom. He's not my
fourth or
odds
fifth
on
year in GP now? I think it's
something like
fifth
that.
year, fifth year.
Look,
But
Miller's
yeah.
going to win races. Let's just be straight honest about that. Miller will win races on that motorcycle. The question is, can he find enough consistency across different tracks to be able to be a threat for a championship? In my opinion, no, not yet. The bike is not there yet. I don't think that he can. He's not my favorite to win the title. I do think he's going to harass people for the title, but there's something in the back of my mind that says at some point, that performance curve that he's on is going to fall off, whether it's him, tires, the bike, or just plain bad luck that he's now having to ride hurt as opposed to riding at full fitness. Whatever, take your pick of any of those possible options, but that's where I see it.
Right. Now, coming up behind him was a trio of Yamahas led by Vinales and his new factory teammate Quartararo in third, and then Franco Morbidelli on the A-Spec bike, which is, I don't even know what that bike is now. It's like it's a 2019, but it's slightly upgraded, but it's not the 2020 because nobody wants that junk. I'm not entirely sure what that Franken bike is. Haha, Frankie. Yeah, there we go. man, just full of these dad jokes today.
Yes, you are,
yes,
and I like
but
it.
regardless is that the factory boys are much happier with the way the bike feels. Obviously, Morbidelli is feeling good with the bike. But the thing is, there's not much of a gap, right? A 153.3 for Morbidelli, only to be bested by 1/100th, right? Or excuse me, 1/10th at a 153.2 for Quartararo, and then a 152 point, or it's only then between Quartararo and Vinales is 2/100ths. So the bikes are still very similar. But the thing that I saw that stuck out to me the most was Quartararo ran the most consistent lap times under 155, I think, of anyone during the test. So he's kind of got, it looks like, with his mojo's back. And so everyone's got to get something solved here. Vinales got to figure out the beginning of the race, and his team spent a lot of time with a full fuel tank, beat up tires, new tires, different combinations. I guess he says he feels really great about how the bike feels now at the beginning of the race. Quartararo loves the edge grip consistency, and Morbidelli is just relaxed and can take on anything. So Yamaha might actually be realistically a decent threat again if they have figured out their woes from last year.
That's the big question mark. I don't think any of us know whether they truly have fixed the problems that they've had with the motorcycles. That's the biggest question that we've got going. They seem to think that they are on the right path. Their times indicate that they may be on the right path. We will know more when that motorcycle gets to Portimao. That's where you're going to know something important, because that track is going to tell us a whole lot about how the whole season is going to shake out.
Yeah, you're not hiding anything at that track. You can
No,
hide
it's
to,
not.
yeah.
There's nowhere to cover your flaws. You've got to have acceleration. You've got to have edge grip. You've got to be able to have handling. You got to have braking. You got to be able to use the tire but not abuse the tire. It's all there at that track. And the problem is that in my mind, if Vinales gets one, maybe two bad races, that's it. His mind's going to be gone. It's going to be shot, because I don't think he's strong enough to pull himself back together again. And there he goes. He's just going to be flailing around, flailing his arms, throwing the toys out of the pram, and it's all going to be wasted. Quartararo is in that same boat. If Quartararo can get off, have a good start, get through the first two races in Qatar, bank some points, get to Portimão, have a strong run of Portimão. Doesn't have to be on the podium. It just has to be a strong run, top five. If he can go there, he's going to have that confidence. And if he keeps that confidence, that could be building, and he could be someone to watch for a title, possibly a title challenge. Morbidelli's got the bike that he's going to be able to do the most with, because all he's got to do is worry about setting up what he has. And at the end of the year, nobody was faster than Morbidelli. Is that going to happen again this year? Don't know. Is his A spec bike and not a factory bike going to cause him problems in a development war, or in some place where the other teams are going to have that little advantage over him that he cannot possibly get because he doesn't have the latest kit? Don't know. It's a big question mark there. But I got to think that out of the gate, Morbidelli is going to be one of the people that's going to have to be in contention. And if he can ride consistently to podiums, you know he's going to be able to get there and get the odd race win. He can be champion. In fact, Morbidelli is the guy that I think has the best shot of winning the title of anybody. It's the most solid bike with the best. It's the most solid bike, right? With a guy who is not flustered by anything. He does not get upset about what he has. He works on what he has, and he makes what he has the best that it can be. And I think he's got a legitimate shot to be a world champion.
So, if you're somewhere where you can bet on racing, there you go. Take a couple bucks, Morbidelli, Jim call. Remember, if you hit it big, Jim likes a nice 10% cut. Just so. That was my
I'll be
threat.
totally wrong. I have no idea, but I look at what. It's not so much what they do in testing times. It's not so much that they put a big run together. It's about how they work with their team. That's the biggest secret.
Definitely agree. All right. Now behind them, the Yamaha trio, we had Pecco Bagnaia. Now he's going to be, of course, Jack Miller's team on the factory Ducati this year. Had a good couple string run, strong run of races last year, but did have some performance issues and injuries at the end of last year. So seeing him already coming out of the gate strong, another great result. I think this is going to be another young guy that's, I think he's in a sophomore season. He is certainly got his head wrapped around MotoGP, and he could definitely make a push towards the front this year. Uh-oh. I think we might have lost Jim. All right, so we did lose Jim. So we're going to try to get things going back here in just a moment. Remember, he is on the hotel Wi-Fi. So maybe he didn't pay for the upgraded version, and that's why he dropped after 40 minutes. Here he comes. Okay, are we back?
I'm back now. Sorry. Dodgy Wi-Fi.
Darn. Yep, I might leave in my part because I was like, "Oh, I think Jim didn't pay for the upgraded Wi-Fi at the
Yeah, leave
hotel."
it
So
in.
here we are.
You're talking about Ben Yaya, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so Pecco Bagnaia, yeah, I was saying about how he's in his sophomore season, should be making his way towards the front more often now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Ben Yaya's had some speed. We saw it last year, right? So I think he's going to do okay. Podiums are on the cards, definitely. Race win, he should probably get one at Misano, right? But other than that, I think we're fine with. He's not going to be. I don't see a championship challenge out of him.
Right, so guy in sixth place here. Now this is where I think, and I don't want to sound like I'm being a Debbie Downer on this, but this is where testing is a bit of a lie for us, right? We have Aleix Espargaró again on the Aprilia, setting very competitive lap times here in sixth. But we did this last year, and they had to back the motor down, so the bike wasn't as good. Now, Alesha's, the bike's frame is amazing. They've kind of got the power issue figured out, and he thinks they're going to be way more competitive this year. But, this is a wait and see. Right now, with the Aprilia being so high up above all the other, a lot of the factories, Suzuki and Honda, it's like, okay, Anketim, is this really what we're seeing? Or is it that they went out, super sticky tires, took all the feel out, and this was compared against bikes that weren't, right? So this is.
No, this is real.
Yeah.
I'm convinced this is real.
Really?
Simon Krafar has an article in MotoGP.com. He thinks their pace is real. He thinks they're knocking on podiums with their pace. I
Podiums.
have to agree. I
Podiums.
think yes, at certain tracks, definitely podium. A
Okay.
podium by Aleix. I see it. I think they've got it. Aleix's got the smile on his face. The bike's got the handling. They got the all new 90 degree V4. That motor seems to have finally found what it is. I mean, they have built a wholly brand new motorcycle, and nobody else has. And they might have a chance this year at podiums. I mean, look, it was crazy things were said previously about me saying KTM's got to have a podium here or there, and they wound up winning races with it, right? I see the same thing happening here with Aprilia. I think you're going to see the odd podium.
Okay. All right. Interesting enough. 2020's champion, Joan Mir. He is in seventh ahead of his teammate, Alex Rins. So Suzuki looks like they had a testing program. This is what they stuck to. That bike is
Yes.
probably not the sixth or seventh fastest bike on the grid. Maybe in top speed. Maybe their top speed looked good last year. But the fact that both these riders are so close in testing makes me think that Suzuki was not showing all of their cards just yet.
I think that they had a program, like as you said, they followed that program. It's really a case of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that's kind of where they are. I think they need a little more power. And what I've read from Simon Krafar again was that they have found it, that the motor is slightly improved without hurting the other characteristics of it that make it work for them. They're close. Do they have enough to repeat as champions? I don't think so. I mean, they're going to be close, but they have got to figure out
Yes, that
qualifying.
is their sticking point for sure.
Okay, as tight as this field is now, if you are not in the top six, you are not going to win the race. I mean, there's always going to be that weird rain race or something happens crazy where someone from, the fourth row wins the race because three guys get knocked off in the first corner or whatever, right? But if you take that as a regular MotoGP race and ran in a normal, what we think of as a race, a start without any stoppages and you run straight through and it's not rain. If you're not in the top two rows qualifying, you are not going to win that race. And the Suzuki is too easy on its tires. And there were some races late last year where the Suzukis didn't get the tires working until three quarters of the distance. I mean, if you have Marquez riding at 75% of what Marc Marquez can do you think Rins or Mir are going to be able to catch Marquez at that point? I don't think so, because that kid's going to be gone. So they're going to have to be able to qualify better, and they have to be able to ride at the front of the pack from the minute the race happens. And maybe they can, and like I said, maybe they're not showing us, but there's a big question mark there for me about Suzuki, about how good is it. There's definitely wins on the table, but I consistently, they got to be just that little bit better than they were last year.
All right, so 9 and 10. These riders are probably going to be my favorite to watch progress this year because I think we're going to be seeing some interesting things come from. And that's Johann Zarco there in ninth, making his debut on the Pramac Racing team. He had his year to figure out the Ducati last year, and at times was setting crazy last, pole position style laps. And he's just dialing it in. I think moving up to this team with a little bit more experience, a little bit better connection to the factory, that he is going to make a big push this year. And then Pol Espargaró making the switch over to the Honda. He's figuring out that bike, definitely getting his handle on it. Already coming in 10th. I think he's got a lot of room to improve there. Both these guys are going to, I think, make big steps from where they're currently on the timesheets, and I'm interested to see how they progress over the season.
Espargaró on the Honda, there's podiums.
I can't
Podiums.
argue that. Can't
Totally.
argue that.
I think Having Jenny Anderson there is going to make that Honda way more rideable for everybody. It goes back to talking about feel and riders and how they work with their teams. Pohl believes in what Jenny tells him and says, you need to try this. And if he has confidence in that and she says, you need to do this with this motorcycle, I mean, he took to that bike like a duck to water. Now, granted, the bike is so similar to a KTM, or the Honda is so very similar to the KTM, that he was definitely going to jump on there and go fast. But he went a whole lot faster, a whole lot quicker than what I thought he could. And so even Simon Crafar is talking about podiums for him. He's talking about podiums for him the first race. I
Oh.
don't think that's possible, but Simon Crafar says he will be in the hunt for the podium at the end of the
All
first race. I'm like, whoa, that is out there, my friend, but I like it.
I mean, he's a lot closer to this, but yeah, that's gonna be interesting. Now we get into the section where I like to call this the unknowns. The
Ooh, the
unknowns.
unknown, yes.
Now back in the lift, we have Rossi making his first switch over to a privateer team since he first came into MotoGP way back in the day. But it's the bike that he knows. It's the Yamaha. Now, he is probably not going to have much final say in the direction that bike goes outside of the setup that his team can provide to him. Now, he recently mentioned that he wants to race for another 2 years, and I think a lot of that is going to depend upon how this season goes for him. Rossi still has a lot of skill, can still get up there and mess you, especially when things aren't going right on the track. That's when he does go right. Rainy weather, missed setups, he has adaptability, and which is what makes him great, or any of the riders that are at the top, they can adapt to things. But again, are we seeing his decline because Father Time, or is the bike good enough this year to raise him back up? Time will tell. And in 12th place, Nakagami, that's a note. Last year we saw so much potential, and even a pole position that was just unfortunately tossed away at Aragon when the pressure got to him and he got a few inches off the racing line. But we still saw very convincing results that Takagami was going to be a podium challenger this year. But from testing, the consistency wasn't quite there for either one of these riders, and I think we just really don't know what their potential is right now.
I completely agree with you. I can't believe that Rossi's still riding. More power to the guy. You're in that middle zone where you just don't know who you expected Nakagami to give you more, but maybe that's all that he's got. You just don't know. This is where if you're trying to predict something, you're gonna shake your head and go, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, this is very much a wait and see. Now we're kind of getting into the part of testing where this is a lot of rookies, people on new bikes. So there's not much that we're going to know from this, right? Stefan Bottel, test rider, he's going to be filling in for Marquez. We know where Stefan Bottel is going to be, right? He's probably going to get us a solid mid-pack result. Jorge Martin stepping up. We don't know. He's a rookie where he's going to be at. Same with Bastianini. But the thing that sticks to me when I'm looking at the timesheets here is that the bottom is full of KTMs. At this track, that,
And it's factory
yes, and at
KTMs.
this track too, I'm a bit confused. So I feel like this is not right. This is KTM is they worked on other things, not outright lap time, and this is not their true position whatsoever.
I agree with you. I think that Oliveira and Bender should be in the top eight somewhere. You have to ask yourself, you lost Jenny Anderson. She got poached. Was she really that important? Are they not working on what they are? They just running a program to figure some things out? You don't know. We don't know. But I just don't think the KTMs are that slow. Bender, I mean, Bender won a race. But hey, Oliveira won too. This is a team that I'm going to not be concerned until we see them at Portimão. If they're mired down here in this positions in Portimão, I'm gonna be like, what's going on, guys? You missed something. What is it?
Now, Alex Marquez sitting here behind the factory KTMs here in 18th place. Again, we saw this guy come damn near close to winning a race last year, so the fact that he's back here doesn't mean anything. He could, again, working with a new team, they had to get stuff dialed in. the Honda's not the easiest thing to ride, so sophomore year, we'll see if he can improve at all. Anything to add on Marquez?
No, I think that's about where we would expect him to maybe be on this bike. I'm not sure if he's got, I don't think it's the factory bike. I think it's he's riding his old factory bike. So he should have been, I think, a little better than he is, but let's face it, that's Fausto's team, right? And look what they went through with losing Fausto. I mean, is anybody really, I don't know where the mental space of that team is. You know what I'm saying?
Whoa, hold on. I'm gonna take a time out here.
Did I miss something
Yeah,
here?
he's at
Did
that's
I
that
screw it
he's
up?
on that's not Fausto's team. Fausto would have been what
That's.
Aprilia turned into. He is on
Sorry. I
look
thought
at
he had.
Luca Ciccinelli, whatever. I don't know if that's not his name is correct. But yeah.
I got this messed
Yeah,
up
that's
back time,
their
didn't
Cal
I?
Crutchlow's old team, right?
Right. It's Crutchlow's old team, which I thought that was foul. I thought that was Fausto's, but I guess I'm wrong.
Because I think Fausto, or maybe. All
Anyway.
right, well. Anyway.
Anyway, it's a long day. It's been traveling on the road. I'm sorry, people, if I've got this all messed up. But again, let's just take it as it is. I think Marquez should have been a little farther up, but who knows what he's doing. He started slow his first year. I assume he's probably going to start slow this year, and he's going to, he's going to be what it's going to be.
And I think, again, he could have some great results this year. What we're going to see, I'm not expecting much, and I'll be surprised when he does throw up the big results, and be happily surprised. Not rooting down the guy, just going to wait for it if he can do it again. But not expecting a whole lot. Bertucci, I honestly am not expecting a whole lot on the KTM. I really think when he got that win at Mugello a few years, that was peak Petrucci right there. You saw it. That was it, folks. And then that's it. That's all you're gonna get. After this, he's gonna be a very steady mid pack. He might go up there and scratch at a podium depending on the race. I don't really see him bothering much of the top five for most of the season on the KTM.
Yeah, I can't see it happening either. It's just going to be what it is. There's, it's just they are where they are, and that's how it is.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a look here. Yeah, there's not much else. Now we're getting into test riders. Cal Crutchlow was out here. I think he was like test rider two or one for Yamaha, so he's down here somewhere. Luca Marini, he's on the bike. Rookie again, learning the Ducati. Iker Lekuona, he's all the way down here in 23rd. But that KTM, I think they were just running through their program. Because he's right there with test rider Danny Pedrosa, so I think they had a lot of things that they were probably getting him to work on. And then you've got test rider Gentile Salvadori, who's a rookie on the Aprilia. Now he's way down here in 26, 155.7, and compared to Aleix, who ran a 153.2. So he definitely has time to gain as a rookie. I would say at least a second of that is because he's just not used to the GP bike, and the other second would be down to his skill that he can either develop or may not. But other than that, I mean, that's pretty much, I think, what we expect everyone else to be at this point.
Yeah, I think everybody's in the places they're supposed to be. I don't think that there's anyone who really isn't that way or there. So, yeah, there's no one out of place except for, maybe Aleix on the Aprilia,
Oh, yeah.
but it's testing. That one's the one that kind of steps out and you
Yeah, and
go,
I just meant at the bottom half that no one's really, I mean, pretty much what you expect down here. Now, as far as the rest of the field, I think the KTM is a big fat lie. I think those guys are much faster than what their results show. I'm not quite sure that the Aprilia is where that is. I would be pleasantly surprised to see another manufacturer battling top five podiums. That's only going to help the sport. Everything else, I think the unknowns where they're at, but I gotta tell you, looking at the amount of talent, how good the bikes are, and how close the racing was last year, you can't afford to not come out of the gates with the right setup or the right bike, because It's going to be a hard, long season for these guys.
It's all about banking points here at the beginning of the season. Every race is so important that you cannot miss a race, right? No one's going to be able to get a mulligan and win a title this year. You're going to have to be there week in, week out. Ultimate consistency will get you that. Will get you what
Yeah,
you're
ask
looking
Ron
for,
Mir.
and that is it. I've been trying to think about that. Was he really that consistent? I mean, towards the end, yeah, it was just, but it was always like third place on the podium, right? Podium, third place, maybe fourth, third place. It wasn't, and I guess our definition of consistency is really kind of blurred because Mark Marquez, he was either first or second in every friggin'
True. This is
race,
very true.
right? So our standard that we look at as far as consistency is so skewed by him and what he has accomplished that we simply assume, well, everybody else has got to ride to that level to be champion, and that we were shown last year that that's not necessarily the
But he
case.
also
I
wasn't
mean, look, everybody was talking that
here.
Mir was going to win without, yeah. Mir almost was a world champion without ever winning a Grand Prix, right? A MotoGP bike, which people would have been gone bonkers on that if it happened. But yeah, it's just where things are and what we expect today is such vastly different than what it was, even 5 years ago
True.
for what you needed for consistency.
All
So
right. Well, we are getting a little close. I am actually,
we're
yeah.
getting
Well, I'm
long.
just on my timer here, so I want to briefly just talk about Moto 2, Moto 3, where I talk about. We'll just go over the top 10 and then any points I want to make. So for Moto 2, it's looking like it's going to be another big season. Sam Lowes and Marco Bezzecchi left off right with a, sorry, Remy Gardner now in the KTM team. He is in third. Xavier Virhe there in fourth. Jake Dixon fifth. Aaron Canet sixth. Jorge Navarroza. Bowman Schneider having a nice test there at 8th, and Nicolò Boego looking like his former self there in 9th. Raul Fernandez in 10th. And for those of you concerned about your American riders, we got Cam Beaubier, and these are all combined times by, right? So Cam Beaubier there in 15th, and Joe Roberts in 12th. So Roberts was very much higher for most of the tests. I think he might be working on some stuff, so he slipped down, but he's looking comfortable and good on the Ilto Trans, and Cam has been gaining time hand over fist every time he gets to a new track. He's a little bit back there, but I mean, I think he made it something like 10 or 12 positions from the time he first went out there and cut some laps. So both those guys are gonna be real exciting to see, and it's the first time two Americans have been on MotoGP for quite some time.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Quickly for me, I think it's Lowe's versus Gardner and Bezzecchi for
Oh,
the title.
100%.
I think I think as good as what Sam Lowe's was riding last year, he's got to be the odds-on
Yes,
favorite, right, to
yes.
win it. What surprised me was Gardner was that fast on the KTM. Obviously he's on the proper team. Are on a very good team, right? So he's showing what he can do. I appreciate that. Arena surprised me. He was 11th. He's our Moto3 champion of last year. And the one person that I sat there and looked through the list and went, wow, is De La Porta. 2 years removed as a Moto2 champion, and he's way down there, which is shocking. Other than that, I mean, I want to see the Americans do well. Roberts has definitely got to put in a title challenge this year, I think, if he wants to go anywhere, move on in this. And I think it's gonna be nice to see. I want Jake Dixon to get a win
Yes.
because I think he deserves it, especially after Le Mans and whatnot. But yeah, the race is definitely going to be between the guys who are at the top of that list. That top 12 guys are the ones who are going to be battling for the
And
title.
what's really scary about Moto2 for these guys is why, weekends are going to be tough for every single one to be close. There is 2.2 seconds covering the entire field.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's insane. That's 30 bikes. Now, not will all 30 be at every track? No, probably not. But if they are, I mean, that's just insane. So It is down to minor adjustments. These guys are going to be having to put in a lot of good work, and whoever figures it out first will be up front.
Yep. Who can ride around your
That's right.
problem? That's who's going to win
Yeah, and
that.
I think Gardner's really good at that, actually.
I
So I
do
think that's
too.
why
I
he's
do
scary
too.
up there. Sam is pretty
Yep.
decent for that as well, too. And don't the thing about Sam, what the paddock cannot let him do, they can't let him get on a streak. If he gets on a streak, he just locks in,
Oh
and
yeah.
yeah, no.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's a streaky rider, man. He gets one becomes two becomes three becomes four, and it
Yep.
just off it
He doesn't slow
goes.
down, that's the thing. I mean, the only thing that slows him down is if he dumps it, but he's gotten a lot better at that, so definitely a very good favorite. All right, so that brings us down here into Moto3. Some names we know, some names we don't. We got João Macia leading it off, followed by his teammate Pedro Acosta, so that's kind of a name we'll have to get used to seeing towards the front, perhaps. Dennis Faggi there in third. Looks like Aizen Guevara, he's there in fourth. Gabriel Rodrigo still kicking around some tires there in Moto3 in fifth. John McPhee in sixth. He needs to have a season of all seasons to kind of secure his future in MotoGP paddock. Jeremy Alcoba there in seventh. Romano Fanati kind of back to his former self there in eighth. Philip Salik there in ninth. And Darren Binder, who I think is going to have a much better season. And man, I wish he had gone to Moto2, but they're in 10th. Everybody else in here is this is another field that I think is lying to us, right? Toba back in 14th is not really where he's supposed to be. I think Sergio Garcia in 15th and Sasaki, those are all guys that were, you know, they've been on the podium or close to it.
Well, Honshu being down in 22nd,
Right?
I just don't think that's
No,
right.
no. So I think
You know?
there's definitely something to see that we're going to. We know from Moto3. It doesn't matter where you qualify.
It's crazy class. Yeah, I think that the guys that are at the top are definitely the guys that are going to be going after that title. I think you throw Toba in there. Because he's probably the one notable. But what about Darren Binder too? He's on that Sprintus Racing bike
I'm
now.
expecting
He
big
was in the top
things.
10. I want something magical to happen there.
I want Binder Brothers in
This
GP.
class, it fascinates me. This class fascinates me to no end because you just cannot predict it. This is not a, you know, there. You were doing this on the big long straightaway at LaSalle, which is what, like a quarter, like a, not a quarter of a mile, a kilometer long. If somebody didn't get a toe, they're going to be a tenth faster, you know? So this flips upside down real fast. So I love Moto3 as a class. I mean, it's one of the classes that's like you just kind of stop taking notes when you're doing the show. You
It's
just like,
almost
I got to watch
impossible.
this.
Yeah, it's rather
It
impossible.
changes too much. It's going to be fantastic racing in Moto3, and who cares who wins? Because what you're trying to figure out is who's going to be the guy, who's going to be the guy that's going to be the good Moto2 guy, and then become the next MotoGP guy, right? That's what you're trying to do. You're not really caring if he's like a world champion or not. You're just sort of like you want to find who's the guy who's got the talent.
Right, because it could be the guy that has the outright speed, but he just puts it down too much. But you tell him, you just got to slow him down and he'll be much faster, right? I mean, look at Darren Binder,
Yeah.
that's kind of that guy. You know, had a lot of crashes, but you stop doing the crashes, and it's like, this guy's got some nutty skills when it comes to braking and throwing it in. That's what you need at the next level, so we'll see. All right, Jim, we got to wrap this thing up and get the
Get a
heck
roll,
out of
man.
here. Remember, folks, you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. It's race week. Hit us up. Let us know what you thought about the races, what you did or didn't like, what you thought we were completely out of bounds when it came to predictions, or if we were spot on. Whatever it is, shoot us an email. We'll be happy to throw it here and discuss it on the show. Remember, again, you can also reach us and your fellow Motopod listeners on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Motopod. We're on Twitter as well, at @Moto_Pod. You can follow us there for any news, announcements, general motorcycle banter. Most likely, you're just going to find some banter these days. We don't really do any news or announcements. Now, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. The handle there would be @SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
Instagram and Twitter at MotoRGV.
Perfect. All right, folks, that is the last show of the off season. The next time you hear from us, a race will have happened. We're here. It's happening. It's time to go racing, Jim.
Yeah, zoom, zoom, baby. Let's roll. Green flags.